Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Dr. Surbhi Sidhana of Stanford University spoke about the FDA's accelerated approval of iberdomide plus daratumumab and dexamethasone for patients with relapsed or refractory multiple myeloma. She highlighted how this approval may impact the multiple myeloma paradigm, as well as other next steps for the evolution of the CELMoD class.
We're talking a little bit today about the recent approval of iberdomide-based treatment in relapsed refractory multiple myeloma. On a broad level, what does this accelerated approval of this treatment mean for patients with relapsed refractory disease?
So I think this approval is a landmark approval for several reasons. The first of which is it's our first approval in multiple myeloma based on an MRD endpoint. MRD, or measurable residual disease or minimal residual disease, is looking at, you know, myeloma plasma cells at very low levels, 1 in 100,000, 1 in 1,000,000. And last year, we heard from the FDA, based on the recommendations of the ODAC, that they were open to using MRD as an endpoint for drug approval. And Russ, I will tell you, this was years in the making, a lot of effort from, you know, us in academic myeloma practice, our industry sponsors, organizations that work in myeloma, like the International Myeloma Foundation, and several ASH members. We got together, got the data that MRD is a surrogate for survival outcomes, and the FDA accepted it. And this is the first approval based on that. So drug agnostic, it's historic for our, you know, field in general, because PFS now is several years. We can't wait several years to get these drugs into our patients' hand. We want to get them to our patients early. And so this leads that this is like a trailblazer in that sense. But coming back to iberdomide, I think having that as an option, which is an oral drug, easy to give, is tremendous for our patients. So iberdomide is a CELMoD, which, for those who are familiar with myeloma practice, I think of them as immunomodulatory drugs, but better. 2.0, right? They're oral. They have a REMS program, which we can talk about, which is very similar, and they're given on a very similar schedule. And so, but more targeted, which means more target-specific, less side effects.
Gotcha. Thank you very much for providing an overview of the recent approval. I agree that this is a pretty big one in terms of the MRD endpoint, as you mentioned, as well as it being the first representative of the CELMoD class. We'll get into a little bit more detail about CELMoDs on a conceptual level a little bit later. But for now, the Excalibur RRMM trial was the one that supported this approval and it enrolled patients with 1 to 2 prior lines of treatment. So what is this combination bit in your current sequencing for relapsed refractory myeloma, particularly relative to other daratumumab-based or triplet regimens that are already available in this setting?
So just to summarize for our audience, a relapsed refractory multiple myeloma Excalibur study, as you said, 1 to 2 prior lines of therapy were allowed for these patients. They were relapsed. Now, majority of the patients were enrolled after 1 prior line of therapy. That was 2/3 of the patient. 1/3 had 2 prior lines of therapy. They could not be Dara refractory or bortezomib refractory because they were randomized to either iberdomide Dara dex or Dara bortezomib dex. And only 5% of the patient population was Dara exposed, which is, of course, a little bit different than the way we practice right now. We are using Dara in the upfront setting, for something for us to keep in mind. Having said that, I mean, iberdomide is now approved after 1 prior lines of therapy. It's approved in combination with daratumumab, but of course, in clinical practice in the US, we often use things off-label. So I do expect it may be combined with other drugs. There's a very long track record of combining immunomodulatory drugs with other drugs like proteasome inhibitors and so on. And so I think while the approval is iberdara-dex, it may be combined with others. Now, where do I see it in my practice, right? We have a plethora of options for first relapse, which is the great news for our patients. We have CAR-T. We have bispecific antibodies with recent approval of Tecdara, so that's the immunotherapy. We have belantamab-based combinations for early relapse. And now we have iberdomide, and we already had, you know, Dara Palm Dex and, you know, Kyprolis or carfilzomib-based combinations. Good news, we have an option that suits every patient. Challenging news, how do you decide? So I would say that for patients who can get immunotherapy, CAR T or bispecific, right? Higher response rate, higher MRD negativity rate, that's a great option. But many of our patients actually don't live close to centers because these are given at academic centers that give CAR T or bispecific. They live in the community, they're given treatment in the community, and for many reasons may or may not be able to relocate. So for those patients, especially those who are older or frailer or those who cannot go to a center that offers this immunotherapy, this offers a very convenient option that can be given at every oncologist's office, right? Not just very expert centers with lots of logistical requirements. I also think in my practice, now I'm at an academic center, I can offer all of these therapies. How will I use it? So for CAR T, there is a period of time between like for apheresis and infusion, that's the bridging period, right? We need to give patients something to bring their disease burden down, because we know bringing their disease burden down leads to more safe CAR T, less side effects, but also more effectiveness in the long term. This can be a great bridging regimen, which can then be given in partnership with our community oncologists, right? This is also being investigated, although not yet, those trials are not yet done, in combination with bispecifics. So in the future, we might even be able to combine it with bispecifics. But because we have so many immunotherapy options, I think this also is a great sandwich approach. What if someone started teclistamab in, you know, closer to home? Now their T cells are exhausted. You want to get them to CAR T. We know there is encouraging data from small trials that this might be able to actually rejuvenate the CAR T cells or revive the CAR T cells. This was data presented at the ASH meeting last year from a small study that one cycle of iberdomide led to better CAR T manufacturing. So we may be able to sandwich this approach between two immune therapies. Or for some patients, if they need maintenance after CAR T, a majority don't, but a minority, I do maintenance because they're high risk or they don't have complete response that's MRD negative. This can be an excellent drug. And in fact, we are developing a trial through Stanford of using iberdomide as maintenance. So there's many approaches because it's such a flexible drug to be combined with different approaches.
I see. Thank you for getting into detail with everything. Getting into the approval itself a little bit more, iberdomide does carry a box warning for embryo-fetal toxicity and thromboembolism, and it is only available right now through a REMS program. So how does that REMS requirement change counseling and logistics compared with existing immunomodulatory drug-based regimens that you're already managing REMS for?
Yeah. You bring up an excellent point, the REMS program requirement that comes with iberdomide and the thromboembolism risk. The good news is we are used to doing this for 20 years for lenalidomide and pomalidomide. The REMS program, it's the same manufacturer, I expect, is going to be very similar. The patient needs to enroll in the REMS program with monthly questionnaires. The doctors need to enroll in the REMS program. Because all of us are so used to doing it and have processes and it's the same manufacturer, I honestly don't think, Russ, that this will be a practical concern at all for access to these drugs. We know that there is an increased risk of thrombosis. Most patients just get an aspirin. If you're combining them in high-risk patients with other regimens that can increase risk of thrombosis like carfilzomib, or if someone has other risk factors, we'll often give them a DOAC. So this is, again, something we are very used to doing in our clinical practice.
And on a practical level, how does the toxicity profile of iberdomide-based treatment compare to what you've previously seen with pomalidomide or other lenalidomide-based combinations?
So CELMoDs are more target-specific, so they have less off-target toxicity. And I will say that you might see less fatigue and less diarrhea with iberdomide than you see with lenalidomide, which becomes a challenge with our patients who are on lenalidomide for years and years and years. After a year of being on it, they all have this fatigue, this brain fog, and some low-grade diarrhea. So there's less signal for that. Some of the side effects are very similar, especially neutropenia. A majority of patients will get severe neutropenia with iberdomide, something to watch out for. Most of this happens in the first two or three cycles. So when that happens, hold the drug, give G-CSF. It settles down over time, but that's something to be aware of. Infection signal is also there with both upper respiratory and lower respiratory tract infections, including severe infections being common, something to be aware of. You know, we're very used to managing these with our patients who are getting myeloma therapies, but just something to make our colleagues aware of. Lower neuropathy signal, very, little neuropathy. There is some, we see that as a class effect, even with IMIDs. but much less than the control arm of the cohort, which included bortezomib-based treatment.
Now, speaking a little bit more broadly beyond iberdomide specifically, this is the first FDA approval for any CELMoD within that class. I think you described it earlier as essentially being IMiDs 2.0, but how would you explain to a community oncologist what distinguishes truly a CELMoD from an IMiD like lenalidomide or pomalidomide beyond just being more potent?
So I think for practical purposes, IMiDs and CELMoD administration is very similar. We talked about it's an oral drug given on a 3-week on, 1-week off schedule in this trial. You know, the toxicities, some of them are very similar, low blood counts, increased risk of blood clots. So that's very familiar. The REMS program also is very similar to what is there for lenalidomide and pomalidomide. So there's a lot of familiarity there, which is, you know, very helpful for our community partners because they're dealing with so many drugs, so many diseases. Familiarity helps. I think the advantages here are they're more potent and they're more specific. So there's less off-target side effects, so less diarrhea, less fatigue with iberdomide compared to what we might see in clinical trials with lenalidomide. So easier to tolerate, but very convenient oral drug, very similar, you know, practice things that they need to develop for their practice to administer this.
Yeah, I think those are some good points. The familiarity aspect that you described, I think that's a pretty big boon. Seems like there's just less of a learning curve to using something like iberdomide compared with some other cell therapies that have been coming out. But given your own focus on CAR T and bispecifics, where do you see CELMoDs fitting relative to other T cell redirecting therapies? Do you see it as a bridge, a post-relapse option, or as a combination partner to boost immune effects or another role? I think you went a little bit into detail regarding iberdomide, but anything more on that?
Yeah. So Russ, I think you bring it right to the point. Where do we see the role of this in academic centers, in a practice like mine, where we're, you know, giving CAR T, we're giving bispecifics, they have very high MRD negative rate. I think it's a complement, right? So it's available in the community for patients who can't travel or cannot, you know, come here. But for CAR T patients, right? If I do CAR T as my first relapse, they need bridging. They can get this as bridging therapy while the 2 or 3 months while we want them to get a response. Then in some patients where we want to give maintenance, and we are studying that in clinical trials, and I think it's becoming more commonplace, if they're still MRD positive after CAR T, we know these patients don't do well. If they're functionally high risk or have EMD, we know these patients won't get the years and years. We want to give them some easy maintenance that they don't need to come back to get injections or infusions. This can play a very complementary role. Then post-relapse, I think it's a great option. Just a couple of days ago, you know, I had a patient who was relapsing and they had everything under the sun. And before this approval, that would have been a very difficult conversation. They had all CAR T and bispecifics, were not eligible for a trial. And I said, guess what? We have a new drug that you might be eligible for that's oral, and this is an older patient. And so this brings hope for, you know, as a relapse option as well. While we are patients get a lot of disease control that's durable, patients still relapse. Many of them do so. Relapse option, maintenance option, bridging option. And I think as we sequence these immune therapies between bispecifics and CAR T, if someone got a bispecific first, we have concerns about T cell exhaustion. We know that these CELMoDs can reverse T cell exhaustion to a level. And so we can perhaps put someone on one of these CELMoDs, you know, iberdomide right now, give them 2-3 months of it, they get myeloma control, and then we can manufacture for CAR T. Those clinical trials are also ongoing. So I think even in academic practice where we are using CAR T and bispecifics, they have a huge role to play. And of course, they're also being tested in combination with bispecifics.
Definitely sounds like there's still a lot to look forward to in space. But ultimately, when you look ahead towards the future, do you think CELMoDs will eventually move into these earlier treatment lines, including maintenance or newly diagnosed settings? And what data would you want to see first?
So I do think, just like with every drug, first tested in late relapse and early relapse, this will eventually move to the front line. And those clinical trials are already ongoing. You mentioned maintenance. So lenalidomide maintenance is our standard of care after stem cell transplant. There's a large randomized trial ongoing looking at iberdomide versus lenalidomide maintenance. The challenge with len maintenance is tolerability, right? Patients get diarrhea, as I mentioned, and fatigue, and it becomes a little bit challenging the more you go on it. And if you have a drug that is more tolerable, of course, you want to see the data. But if that trial truly shows it's more tolerable, and perhaps more effective, or even if it's just as effective, then it becomes a great option for maintenance treatment. There's also trials ongoing to integrate into our combination approaches for newly diagnosed setting.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I know we covered a lot already. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about or bring up that we did not discuss already?
You know, Russ, I want to make you aware of an initiative with the American Society of Hematology, right? We are so fortunate to have all of these approvals, you know, CAR T, bispecifics, CELMoDs, but a lot of these approvals start with 10 years ago, 20 years ago, someone working on the bench on research that didn't clearly have a path to approval at that time. It takes a long time. So we need to continue investing in research funding and NIH funding. And this is very important that this is a very topical issue for our time. Every, you know, few months, we're talking about NIH budget cuts, and ASH has an initiative called Fight for Hematology. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. I just want to make your readers aware of this as well, where we're advocating with ASH members and hematologists, advocating to our legislators, making the general public aware of how important it is to continue to fund blood disorder research and hematology research so we can have all of these new approvals for our patients.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.